Hello and welcome to another evening with me, Michael, and my colleague and friend
Luke. Oh, that's my cue.
Well, to be fair, it's all right. You know, it's our podcast, it's our chat, we can do whatever we want. This
Hello.
Is, for your consideration, episode 3.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we're actually recording it before episode 2 goes out. Because we were like, let's look at our Februarys, and most of our Fridays in February were not available. So we were like, we'll have to do this one then.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, episode 1 seems to have gone down quite well so far.
Yes.
I mean, it's had quite a few downloads anyway.
Yes.
And nobody's complained.
I was going to say, we've not had any complaints, but I don't think we've had any... Have we had any feedback? Oh, no, you had somebody comment loads on your YouTube version, didn't you?
Yeah, it's my old mate Richard from back in Newcastle, although he's not from you. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But that's where I know him from, and I haven't seen him for years, but it is nice to have all this feedback. And, of course, he'll be hearing this, so he'll probably put feedback here.
There we are.
Well, and he's hopefully listened to episode 2, which hasn't gone out yet for us, but will have been out for a month by the time everybody hears this one. So... we'll hopefully know more about what people think of my choice of Paradox.
That's true. Well, it's so, all right. Oh.
What's your choice for this week, then,
right,
Michael?
This time's choice is... Now, I always thought it was called Harrison Bergeron, but apparently in the episode, in the film itself, they call him Harrison Bergeron, like Bergerac. He was actually called that at one point.
Did Kurt Vonnegut express... how to pronounce the name in his short story?
I don't think so, no. But they've called it that, and God bless them. I don't know why they didn't change its name, because it's not the most accessible of titles.
Well, I was reading up, and there have been other adaptations, and none of the other adaptations have called it Harrison Bergeron. They've all called it something else. Like, I think there's one that's called after
research.
The year that it's... Well, I read the Wikipedia article on... the original short story, and it was this has been adapted several times, including the 1995 TV movie, which we watched, but also apparently there's like a 25-minute version that was made more recently that's called 2081, I believe, and there's possibly another few versions. And apparently it was also cited in a court case once. And Kurt Vonnegut was asked whether he minded, and he said... they interpreted it incorrectly, but he didn't mind it being cited in the court case. I don't know, like, what his interpretation is, what their interpretation was, but it was struck me as being interesting. And I'd never heard of this before you said we're going to watch Harrison Bergeron. So
excellent. Are you familiar with Vonnegut's other work at all?
I have
it's
never
not a
read.
Crime.
No,
you know, I'm just wondering.
I have never read any of his stuff. I am aware of Slaughterhouse-Five. As a title, but I have no idea about the rest of his oeuvre.
Well, I might have come across the odd short story, because I used to devour short stories like there was nobody's business. I just love short stories. But on the novels front, the only one I've read is Slaughterhouse-Five.
Okay.
And it's odd. It's incredibly good. It's not what you would think. I think that's the title makes sense when you're reading the book. You're about 7/8 of the way through and you go, oh, right, that's why it's called that. And I believe there's a movie of it, which I've never seen. But I remember it being in the 1970s sci-fi omnibus movie book. And there was a still from it, which I can't actually place from the book. So all I've done is read the book. And that is well worth a peruse. It's not the thickest of things. It's about the same thickness as a sort of Target novelization. So I wouldn't be... It's
so
basically a Second World War story with some sci-fi elements smeared into it.
Okay.
And it's set in the future and the past, and there's a few other things as well. So it's well worth experiencing. I think that's the best way to describe it. But we're not here to discuss that. We're here to discuss this.
So had you read the short story before you watched the TV movie?
Not even remotely.
All right. So tell me how you encountered it and why you've brought it to us today.
Okay. So at the risk of sounding like Sophia, the old lady out of Golden Girls, picture it. It's Manchester, 1990s, right? It's the back, it's the arse end of the 90s. I'm living in Manchester. Now, I had worked on the TV series Bob the Builder as a prop builder and sort of I'd been brought in to do some extra stuff because they were a bit behind. Worked on that for a few months. It was really nice, but was short contract, went. Cosgrove Hall was the place I'd always wanted to work. So I thought, I'll hang on in Manchester and see about working there. Now, I was in Chorlton cum Hardy, which is where I was living. Okay, so I'm living in this shared house with a few other people who had been involved in the animation business, set building, extended. This is sort of after my degree, and I still thought I could make a go of it. I was an all right animator, quite a decent prop builder, but these things are all 3D skills that are of absolutely no bloody use whatsoever in the world of computing, which is where we're at now. So I'm like my dad, who's a very highly trained fitter of ships. We had skills which were of no bloody use to anyone. Right, so...
Well, they're of use if you can get a job in animation.
Exactly. Like you. But all I ever was good.
Right.
And sometimes you have to be really good. If you're working class and you haven't got that extra background of connections or anything like that, that's it. It's what you do. Anyway, that's a whole conversation from another time.
Yeah.
Is why we don't run the BBC right now, okay?
I mean... The fact that you and I haven't had a proper conversation about the fact that we both did animation degrees, we should have that conversation at some point in the future.
We genuinely should, because I've not done any animation forever. The closest I came was this week creating my very first GIF. And that's the first bit of actual animation I've done in decades. And I miss it so much. Right, but that's another conversation. So...
And there's another word with a hard G or a soft G.
Yeah, GIF, GIF. The bloke who invented it says GIF, but my name's Gilroy, so I'm going for a hard G. Yeah, so, right. I'm there.
So this is where you're at.
So this is where I'm at. But no. The bit is, I need a job to survive. So I fall back onto the one thing that I've always been extremely good at. So I'm working in Waterstones on Deansgate, centre of the street, right? Okay. So that I've gone back to selling books. Right. Now, I'd worked in the book trade for 10 years while I was at school, all the way through university, off and on at part-time. So I knew my stuff. Now, you cannot get a job in the sci-fi department of Deansgate Waterstones unless you've worked there for about 400 years. Okay, it's a nightmare. You just can't. You can work in any other department, but the sci-fi department's basically like a gatekeeper thing. So I'm downstairs on the front desk because, you know, I can chat to people. That's fine. I'm not the happiest of bunnies. This is the important bit. I'm not getting any animation work because it's all drying up. I'm not getting anything else. I'm currently stuck in a job I've had for 10 years that I gave up to finish my degree, and I'm miserable as sin. I'm going home, and I'm basically, let's use the word depressed, okay? I'm suffering from quite a lot of depression, okay? What did you do at the weekend? I went home, and I lit an entire bag of IKEA candles just to see what it looked like, okay? That's where I'm at mentally. Not a good place. Okay, I'm in this shared house with people I never see, and it's a bit crap. So I'm not sleeping very well because my shift patterns are all crap anyway. And in the middle of the night, about 11:30, BBC One used to show random crap. Some films they'd found in the bottom of bottom of a VHS basket. Right, in a sell-through store. You know when people used to rent DVDs and then they would sell the old copies of films that nobody bought and you could like buy a video for like £3? That was the sort of film that BBC One would show in the middle of the night. So,
right.
with zero expectations and the fact that I couldn't sleep, I watched it on what I could only describe as a 5-inch black and white portable, because the house, I didn't know if it had a TV license or not, so I didn't have a big TV. And they were all very middle class, and they were the sort of people who were going, no, we didn't do television. And it's like, I'm trapped in a world of people who don't do television. Have you met me? No. Right, so, miserable, miles from home, it's raining, because it's Manchester, it rains more there than it does in the film The Crow. Right, so it's just crap. Anyway, so I watch this film and it speaks to me. It really does. And I loved it. And it just took me out of myself and it really sort of sorted my mood out quite considerably, and it gave me a lift, and it stuck with me for that reason. And then years later, I saw it as a repeat and was not unimpressed. I was like, that's cool. And then sort of what, a few years later, you've got Lord of the Rings, and I'm going, it's the same guy. That's the guy from Harrison Bergeron, or whatever I'd ended up calling it, because it's Sean Astin. So that's where I'm at. It spoke to me at the time, okay. And that's where I saw it. I saw it in the middle of the night. Now, it's made in standard def, so it doesn't get shown a lot. It's not on streaming services because, we couldn't possibly show something that isn't high def, because that's what they're like these days. And, of course, is it 3x4? I think it is.
It's 4x3. It's 4x3.
So it's the sort of format people
Some handy person uploaded it to YouTube so that we can all watch it there.
There's three different versions. Now, I think there's a reason for this. I think that this text, the short story text, is on the American book syllabus in schools. I think that people will upload it and you can get the books, and it's slightly more well known because of that reason. Now, I don't know this for a fact, and I know the American book system's a nightmare. It's like, hey, we're a Florida bookshop, and we're advertising ourselves as we sell banned books. It's that kind of world we're living in at the minute. And the concept I loved. Now, hang on. So, the concept of the film is that everyone is equal, and if they're not, they're made to be equal. There's some flaws on that, yes. And we can discuss that in a minute, right? Well, in fact, we can probably discuss that for the next hour. But there's that.
Oh, I feel that whatever the quality of this film, there is so much thematically that we could talk about, and we haven't.
And
got
that is the reason I've brought
a lot
it
of time to talk about it.
And that's the reason. So,
because you texted me this week before I'd seen it, going, "I regret my decision."
Yeah,
and I thought, because you've rewatched it, and are you suddenly deciding that you don't. Like the film anymore?
No, it felt incredibly slow. It felt a bit. Hang on, you know I'm not particularly great about watching new Doctor Who because I'm always embarrassed that people are going to see it for what it really is, then all of a sudden the great game will be over for us all.
Right,
and I felt that about this. It was like, oh, it's not as good as I remember. And yet, over the days since I've watched it again, I've thought about it every so often and gone, you know, that bit's quite good. I did watch it slightly faster than I should have because I was tired. Because I wanted to get it. I wanted to have watched it again all the way through before we did this talk. Because there was the Harrison in my head, which, you know, means something to me. And then there was the Harrison in front of me that I was watching on a tablet going,
yeah.
Well, it's good. I think it was there's a dodgy sex scene halfway through, and that kind of took me out of it and went, oh, but it's like Terminator. It's needed.
I was going to say it's relevant to the plot.
Well, exactly. But I just felt kind of a bit embarrassed going, this is what the 90s looked like. I forgot. So
it is very 90s.
It's very, very 90s.
The future is, well, at least as far as the elite in their Black Palace go. Everything's going to be on DVD.
Yeah.
I mean,
which I like,
because obviously, DVDs weren't commercially available in 1995. But did the people was it known? This is the thing, because DVDs didn't really come on the market till what, 98, 99? Yeah. I'm going to say.
Yeah. So I'm guessing they were using CDs as props.
They were clearly using CDs as props, but. But it was that thing of like, oh, everything's... And because the tell is that all the cases are CD cases.
Yes. See, I'd not spotted that.
And then they have these... One assumes they're like CD players that they're putting them into, and then they're pretending
My CD player looked a lot like my current Blu-ray player.
Yeah.
Because it was a big thing.
So that's interesting. So it meant something to you in 90... Whatever it was that you originally saw it.
Yeah, and then people call it like 98.
Right,
99, okay. Something like that.
So you saw it a few years after it came out.
Yeah, well, I think we'll call it 98. So, I think if you want to... Yeah.
I suppose here's the other question. So you then saw Lord of the Rings and went, oh, it's the guy from Harrison Bergeron.
Yeah.
Bergeron. Most people at that point were going, oh, it's the guy from The Goonies.
Well, I've not seen the Goonies.
Well, I hadn't seen the Goonies until a few years after Lord of the Rings. So to me, Lord of the Rings was my introduction to Sean Astin. I was like, well, I've never heard of this guy. I was aware of the guy playing Merry, whose name I can't remember. I was aware of him because of
Hetty Winthrop.
Hetty Winthrop. Yes, exactly.
Oh my God, we are so bizarre. Yes.
But yeah, so that was my introduction to him. And then I think I have seen The Goonies, which I didn't really enjoy. I think that was one of those things you had to see as a kid.
Yep, exactly.
And I don't think I've seen him in anything else other than this now. I wasn't thinking Hobbit at all because he's a reasonable height, or at least he seemed to be kind of a similar height to everybody around him.
Uh-huh.
And he was quite an imposing kind of figure within the film. The thing that it did have in common. And my wife and I were having a conversation about this.
You watched it with someone?
About Sean Astin.
All right, yeah.
Because I was like saying, oh, is Sean Astin your favourite Hobbit? And she was like, no, he's too earnest.
Really? That's quite rare. Because a lot of people are like, oh my God, if anyone could lift up Thor's hammer, it would be, you know, him.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the major problem with Lord of the Rings is Elijah Wood. Like, I just don't care for him at all. And he and Sean Astin are both doing kind of like earnest performance, which is fine. Yeah. It's clearly what they've been asked to do. And then you've got the light relief of Merry and Pippin, who are much more my cup of tea. This was the kind of conversation I'm having.
I
would say that Sean Astin very much fits that mold in this. He's a very earnest character, you know.
He's noble because he gives up his headband. Yeah.
Yes. Well, and ultimately his life, you know.
Right, hang on. Right. So we're discussing this because we've just seen this. There are people out there who haven't. So are we playing it as if they've seen it because they're doing watch along and we're just discussing it? Or do we need to like...
I think we said last episode that if you want to be unspoiled, you have to stop listening to us and go away and watch it now.
So we don't have to do a potted version of the plot.
I think for these conversations we have to assume that we can talk about everything in it.
That's fine. That saves a lot of hassle. Yeah. So yeah, he is the most noble and earnest character in it. Yeah.
Yes.
But which is
fine, and it serves the plot. But it feels very American in that regard.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, there's lots of things about it that are very American.
Okay, now, here's an age thing I need to chat about. You know who his dad is?
He looked familiar, but I couldn't quite place him.
Right, see, that's your age showing there. It's Gomez Adams.
Oh, right.
His dad in real life is Gomez Adams, and he's in this as the sports commentator doing the golf.
Oh, sorry. You're saying.
Oh no! In real life, not the guy playing Harrison. No, Sean Astin's dad in real life.
Sean Astin's dad. No, I don't know anything about Sean Astin's dad.
Dad in real life is Gomez Adams, the best Gomez Adams.
Okay.
And I will.
Right.
That's a hill I'm willing to go
on. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, even Raoul Julia was brilliant, but he'll be the original black and white one for me. And he's in Seinfeld and a few other things as well, but. He's just a brilliant performer.
He was in this as the golf commentator, with the wiggly golf sticks. Right,
that's
okay.
That's the one,
right.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
So I thought you were talking about the character
of course.
Harrison Bergeron's dad.
Who
did look familiar, but I couldn't quite place him.
Yes, and I didn't.
And I haven't kind of... The only person I did recognise, apart from Christopher Plummer, obviously, is the doctor that he keeps going to see to get his headband adjusted, who then
turns
out to
be... Where do we
know
him from? Where's he from?
Well, are you familiar with Murdoch Mysteries?
No. I'm aware of the name. See it when you're scrolling along Sky. But yeah.
It's a very long-running, still on as far as I'm aware, murder mystery set in the late 19th century in Canada.
So it's like a period piece kind of thing.
So it's a period piece, but they have kind of like sort of anachronistically him inventing technologies that wouldn't be available until the 20th century.
That sounds like Doc Savage.
It's interesting. Anyway, but for me, his boss is a Sheffield Wednesday fan in real life and in the fiction of the show, so that's kind of cool.
Okay.
Sheffield Wednesday existed in the late 19th century. So they have that aspect. But the guy that we're talking about, Nigel Hallett, I think his name is, he's the senior police chief
right,
over them. So he's kind of he's a sort of recurring character who comes up now and again. And I immediately, the minute he came on screen, I was like, I know you from somewhere. I know you. And then I looked at IMDb and then immediately saw him and was like, yes, that's why I know who you are.
Fair enough.
If you haven't seen Murder Mysteries, then I don't know why you know who he is.
I know we always do the casting thing at the end, but as there's no one from Doctor Who.
There's no one from Doctor Who, no.
We can just have to, which I must admit was a kind of motivating factor in me choosing this one in the first place. But, right, okay. So on the casting front, there's somebody else, and it's the president.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Is the bloke from Schitt's Creek and practically everything else.
American Pie, I think, is the touchstone for
it is for a
people
lot of
my
people,
generation.
Yeah. And for mine, it would probably be Best in Show.
Right, okay.
Which is kind of the same sort of gang that made... I want to say Bad News. It's not. It's oh god, my brain's just died. I'm picturing the title. what's it called? The American the guitarist. The drummer explodes and dies and
Spinal Tap.
It's the Spinal.
This is Spinal Tap.
So it's the Spinal Tap team with him. And anyway, so he's in.
Right.
He's been doing stuff.
Oh yeah, I have heard of that.
Best in Show is well worth seeing.
Right.
It's not the bestest film of all time, but it does make you chortle and stuff does stay with you for a very long time. So
Okay.
So what we've got is that now.
So back to Harrison Bergeron.
Yes. So I did regret it at the time because I thought, oh, it's a bit slow. It's not kind of hard sci-fi. It's got some nice concepts. It just feels like an extended Twilight Zone. Oh. And possibly that's because of the place my head was at, but that was why I was a bit regretting it, because I was thinking, we went in so hard last time with the last two episodes where we were like, we had enthusiasm, and the enthusiasm for me just, it kind of wasn't there on the day that I did the rewatch.
Right.
It's come back. It's come back now, quite clearly.
Yeah.
But at the time, I was like, oh, it's all right.
Can I just say that I enjoyed it?
Well,
just
that's
to kind
great.
Of get that out of the way. As I said with Night of the Demon, it definitely held my attention. Can I dive in with like things it reminded me of, and see what you think? So, and most of this is stuff that came after. So you're like, oh, did they riff off that? So the obvious touch point for me was The Matrix. In that The Matrix, you have the first act where he's in a particular world, and then something happens, i.e. he takes the pill and everything and wakes up. And then for the rest of the film, he's in a completely different world. And this felt like that, in that the first act of the film is Harrison Bergeron, and you kind of learn the rules of the world with the headbands and everything, and you kind of realise that he's too intelligent and they're going to have to do something about that. And then you have what I'm going to call his visit to the intellectual brothel.
That's exactly what I've written, a head brothel. So
head brothel. And then he wakes up from that, and it's like, now we're going to tell you what the rules of the world actually are. So it felt a bit Matrix-y in that way. And then it also reminds me of Matrix Reloaded. Do you remember?
I do remember.
There's that much parodied scene at the end where he goes in and the dude in white explains the plot to him.
Yes.
He goes basically. It's all right for the vast majority of humans, but there's a tiny percentage of humans who won't accept the Matrix, and so we have to do something about them, and that's why they're allowed to live in Zion and everything. And it was the same with this. In once Bergeron has done his thing, and he's like, "I bet you think you've disrupted stuff," and he's like, "Well, only about 1.3% of people, paid attention," and it's that similar idea of. Most of humanity can be cowed into being part of the system.
Yeah.
And then there's this tiny percentage of rebels who will rebel, you know, whatever the situation is. Obviously, in this, it's kind of the lack of anything, really. And in The Matrix, it's like we don't want to be batteries in an AI system, you know. So I thought that was reminiscent. And the other one, do you remember Equilibrium?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Which was sort of kind of trading off, like, you're waiting for a Matrix sequel. Well, here's something else that's kind of got cool fighting in it.
Yeah. I remember them setting fire. Is that the one where they said fight the Mona Lisa? Because it's in somebody's storage.
So this is the thing. I was trying to come up with an only connect question, because City of Death, the real Mona Lisa gets burnt.
Mm.
Equilibrium, the Mona Lisa gets burnt. Glass Onion, the Mona Lisa gets burnt. And I was like, I need a fourth one to make an only connect question of like four things in where the Mona Lisa gets burnt. Yeah, so they burn the Mona Lisa. And obviously in that, they're taking drugs to completely suppress emotions, whereas in Harrison Bergeron, they're having their intelligence suppressed, but basically they're having their emotions kind of dumbed down.
The Equilibrium came out at the time that Prozac was a really big thing. And everyone's like, oh no, Prozac's gone away now. No, they've just changed the brand name and there's a lot of people on it.
Yes.
Trust me, I go through a lot of medication, like people's, not me, but I go through a lot of other people's medications at work. So I work for the NHS and I just see the same thing over and over again. So yeah, it's still out there.
It's still
on stabilizers. Anyway, that's a whole, that's a conversation.
So it reminded me of that. You've got the totalitarian regime and then you've got the dude at the top who's not playing by the rules that everybody else is playing by. Because he's not taking the drugs to suppress his emotions.
Hmm. And it's his daughter. In Equilibrium, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then I suppose the other thing visually that it reminded me of a bit was Vengeance on Varos. You know, with the whole kind of like... The populace are watching TV and it's keeping them kind of in their place. And then there's the control room that he goes into with his screens on. That felt very Vengeance on Varos.
Yeah, when I watched it again, because I knew what was coming, the bit where the guy says, yes, this is where all of the TV signals for the entire country are routed through. And I'm thinking, well, that's not very clever. Oh, yes, that's important to the plot. And these walls are incredibly thick. Is that important to the plot? Very probably. And this door, it's impregnable. Is that important to the plot? Yeah, because we've not mentioned any of the other doors or any of the other walls.
It's Chekhov's TV control room.
Yes.
I mean, that's one of the things. They let him broadcast for like 8 hours.
Yeah.
Because it takes them that long to cut through the door. And I'm like, why don't you just cut the cable? Because there must be cables running out of the room somewhere.
There's all power going in.
Yeah, yeah. There must be other ways of disabling the room. But anyway, I think it's a plot contrivance, isn't it? It happens that way because it has to happen that way. So I texted you and said it's a bit derivative, but then I've just listed a whole bunch of things that came after it.
Yeah, because you get the feeling that the ethos of the piece kind of soaks into people's psyche in it, and it just kind of influences them a bit. So it can be very proud of what it is because it was made for TV.
Yeah, but I suppose equally, there are lots of dystopias that were written before and made before this. So it no doubt does kind of riff off. I mean, also you've got the granddaddy. Well, I was going to say the granddaddy is 1984.
Yeah,
but actually, there's We by Zamyatin, but because he wrote it from within the Soviet Union, it didn't get published in the West until much later.
Yeah.
But that was written in the 20s. And then you've got Brave New World, which I suppose echoes of that in here as well.
Yeah. It feels a lot like Brave New World.
Yeah.
Especially the novel rather than the weird TV series. I've not read the sequel.
There's a sequel to Brave New World?
Yeah. I've got it somewhere. Now, it might not be... I know it was packaged as a sequel, but it might be the collected writings afterwards of the same... Of his thoughts on... I think it's some beyond Brave New... I'll check it out. I'll find it before I start making sweeping statements that alter the whole fabric of sci-fi fandom.
Here's a complete tangent. Of the three famous people that died on the 22nd of November 1963...
Mm-hmm.
So John F. Kennedy...
C.S. Lewis
and Aldous Huxley.
And Huxley, yeah.
Huxley is the one person whose death place I have not visited.
Nice.
I have been
You've been to Elm Street.
I've been to where Kennedy was shot in Dallas.
Which is Elm Street.
Is it Elm
That's
Street?
The point. Yes, it's Elm Street. Film's called Nightmare on Elm Street.
Really? Okay. I've been to. There's two X's painted on the road where the two bullets hit him. Just for the morbid. And then I've stood in C.S. Lewis's bedroom. In his house in Oxford, where he died. So,
see, now I would have thought, and I'm going to predict this now, the place that you chose to try and find to stand was where the video was shot from. the Sabrina footage?
No, I did. I mean, I was kind of standing somewhere up the hill, possibly like, somewhere on the grassy knoll.
Everyone's going to, I'll just head to the grassy knoll.
Yeah.
No, I want to see where it was shot from, footage-wise. There is a theory that there was a gun inside that Bolex camera. But anyway.
Oh, okay. Well, this is a massive tangent we've gone on. Should we talk Christopher Plummer?
Yes, we can. We can absolutely talk Christopher Plummer. Because when he died, so many people were like, oh, yeah, let's do Klingon. It was a Shakespeare in the original Klingon.
Yeah.
And all of that business, and that was great. And then there was this tiny little undercurrent of voices, people going, I really like to be in this. And it was the first time I'd ever known that anybody else had seen this film.
Wow.
So, because I'd not come across anybody else even mentioning it.
Well, and I'd never heard of it until you said this was your pick. Well.
He's
very good in it.
He is. He is.
Which is possibly to the detriment of the piece, because, I would say that Sean Astin just about holds his own against Christopher Plummer in the few scenes that they have together.
That's no mean feat. Yeah.
No, but I would say that several of the other actors don't fare so well and come off as kind of quite cartoonish.
Yeah.
But in comparison. I mean, I suppose it's possible that they're written quite one-dimensionally. There's the dude who basically he hates, who orders the lobotomy of his daughter.
Yeah, he's a charming, lovely
man.
He's
just thoroughly horrible. But when he's kind of explaining kind of why he does what he does, I don't think you're ever persuaded that what he's doing is a good thing. But he's
but it's
charming.
Really well
about
put
it.
Over.
Yeah.
that also threw me as well. Because I don't think you would get a TV series made now or a film made now that shows Holocaust victims being thrown into a pit as part of the narrative. Because that's his take when he's telling you why he does stuff, and he starts talking about Beethoven, and he finishes off with I would put the bullet in his head myself.
Yeah.
And to prevent a Beethoven from existing but the rest of the world hasn't followed suit.
No.
The rest of the world's continued as normal.
But they're all at the mercy of whoever is elected.
Who is chosen
to be president, because you have that whole scene where he's going to nuke Morocco or something, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, right. Sorry. There's a film called book called Songs of Distant Earth. It's Arthur C. Clarke. Have you read that one or come across it? Go on.
The only Arthur C. Clarke that I've read is 2001, which is the obvious one to read.
It is the is it called The Beacon or something? The original
The Sentinel is
much more accessible. Anyway, Songs of Distant Earth, okay? The Earth is in peril, because of solar flares. People are going to leave on a spaceship. Okay, this is just the setup, and some gene ships go off, but they're going off after the big ships left, but they're faster, so they get to the destinations quicker. So basically, there are lots of other planets out there in the galaxy that have human descendants on them. And this ship that set off first or earlier is catching up and arriving to places where gene ships have already come. But these other places, the place that it visits on is like a water world with a little bit of island on.
Right.
And they've got, but the people are, they're grown from gene banks. And then once that kicks off, then it goes. And there's loads of little bits that fit together. Things like when a married couple get together. We're going to go heterosexual married couple get together. If the child that's born first is female, then the family name goes from the mother's name. If the first child is male, then you go for the family name from the man. There's a lot of little stuff like that. But here's the thing. Everyone's educated to a certain level. So therefore, the leader is just chosen randomly, which is just like this. And I like that.
Right.
I like the idea of once you've got everyone educated to a certain level, that's it. There's a lot of other stuff involved in that book as well. There's at least half a chapter dedicated to the eradication of religion, and everybody on that world is taking the mick out of the people who were born on Earth, who still say things like, oh my God. And they just start giggling and laughing at them, because all of literature was sent out in the gene ships and any reference to God or religion was wiped. But it also mentions in the next paragraph that there were some other ships sent from Muslim countries and Christian fundamentalist gene ships went off and nobody's heard from those ships. So they've gone off to other worlds.
How do you wipe all traces of God from literature? You can't.
Any reference, any bit of music that's like that is gone. Anything that's a reference,
they're
gone. You're
left with like very little then.
Oh, I know. I know. It's incredible. It's really important. I get it. I totally understand, but that's what Arthur C. Clarke did.
That was his
book, his world, and off he went. But anyway,
he can do whatever it was the
educating people to a certain standard.
So I suppose the problem that I have with that, and then obviously, and it's kind of highlighted in this film, is that education is only one part of the equation, because intelligence will out ultimately. That's kind of the message of the But it depends what the message. It depends what you think the message of the film is. But obviously, they're trying to breed intelligence out of people, which is why he gets matched up with somebody who's really unintelligent to marry, so they can kind of get that out of the gene pool. But there's the whole education system of like, well, you need to be a C grade, and then you need to be a C grade student,
right? Okay, I was describing this to my
A plus.
Yeah, exactly. I was describing this to my wife, right? I didn't make her watch it, but I was describing it to her. And she went, well, that doesn't work. And I went, well, then I know it doesn't work. She went, no, it doesn't work for a reason you've not thought of. And I went, okay. She went, what type of intelligence are we talking? And then I went, oh, God, yeah, you're completely right. Is it?
Yeah.
Because you've got emotional intelligence and you've got all the different ways that it demonstrates itself. Because, I mean, I'm dyslexic, so reading's not my best thing, but I want to be a writer out of sheer bloody mindedness.
Yes.
Right? I find it very difficult, but I'm not going to give up. Right? That's the kind of mindset that I've got.
Yeah.
So I could quite easily just take my foot off the accelerator and be a C student.
Yes.
But I know I'm not, because I push myself to be different. And that's kind of, and I've got lots of coping strategies to be better. So once you've got stuff like that, where does it start? Where does it end?
Yeah.
So on paper, for a narrative reason, totally works. But the actual mechanics...
Well, there's also the question of, like, the teacher.
Yeah.
Right, because the teacher necessarily has to know all the answers.
Yes.
Because she's then able to kind of know that Harrison is getting it right.
Unless she's got the answer book.
Well, I suppose there is that, because you do see her later in the film, kind of watching the TV, subdued like everybody else.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the answer. But yeah. And the film, apart from kind of pairing him up with this unintelligent woman,
it's never really
explored how somebody like that would get through the education system, right? Because you kind of handicapped intelligent people to bring them down. But how do you kind of bring up the people who lack the intelligence?
How do you boost the people up to a C grade?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's just not gone into at all.
Yeah.
Because they are just as abhorrent to that society as somebody getting a D is the same as somebody getting a B. Somebody getting A is the same as somebody getting an E. Because they want everyone to be equal.
Yeah.
So that person would be helped, I guess.
One assumes so. But he's never really. I suppose the point of the film is not to fully explore the society,
well,
is it?
My notes actually say, how are they boosted, or are they just euthanized?
Yes. I mean, in the same way that like the persistently intelligent people are either join the elite or are lobotomized.
Yeah, you know, true.
It's we know that like the regime is capable of
bumping
people off. You know,
we've just totally ignored a massive part of the plot, which is the constant executions.
But then they're like half of them are reruns,
which wouldn't work if you'd done an upgrade to HD, because they're saying, oh no, all of the old ones, they're in black and white.
Ones.
Yeah, But
yes, and the whole kind of the campaign to kind of execute people for the minor violations.
Yeah, and you just think, because the thing is, you've got some weird things going on in Florida at the minute, and in real life, and you're just thinking, that's a road people would be willing to go down. Like, I'm watching YouTubes of people out shopping. So I like going to, like, your Disney and your Universal. I love those. But I like being in the bubble that's behind the security. I like knowing that I've gone through a metal detector and so's the person next to me because, I'm not fond of American gun laws. No. I'll put my hands up there. I don't like people who can just kind of carry them in the street as if they're cowboys, right? Because they're not. Okay, it freaks me out. And when I'm watching YouTube videos of some people out shopping and you see somebody in a cowboy boot store with their gun on and a holster on their side, what are you expecting? You're expecting trouble. Well, anyway, so it messes with my head, that whole thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a worry. Sorry,
yes.
I just got distracted there by real life.
No,
I do apologise. But so you can see it happening in America a lot more easy. But there
is a version of this that you could make.
Hmm.
There's a British version of this that you could make, right? You know,
yeah.
It would look a bit different, but there is a British version of this that you could make.
Okay, yeah.
Can we talk about the pregnancy telegraphing?
What, when she keeps rushing off to throw up?
Well, no, more the... she obviously does that, but the more the I'm looking at the calendar and looking worried.
Oh, yeah, that looks a bit... It did look a bit more like a sort of pregnancy test advert than anything else.
Because I was like... It was one of those things where I was just like, oh, you're telling me that she's pregnant, right? You know, like... Yeah. And then obviously the morning sickness is just there in case you're a bit slow and haven't picked up on the
fact. Yeah, in case you're somebody at a D-grade.
What I didn't see coming was the fact that she was his daughter.
Yeah, yeah.
That took me by surprise.
I suppose
the whole tragedy of the fact that she doesn't tell him why she wants to leave. You know, like, it would have been a completely different film if she'd said, we need to leave because I'm pregnant.
Yeah.
You know, because he would then have been it. And I suppose maybe... And because they kind of spin the idea that these guys love each other, right?
Yeah.
And obviously, it's difficult. I'm not quite sure what the timescale is. Obviously, he gets some time to settle in before he gets his job. So they're not in a relationship for very long. So maybe that's part of it. It's just that she doesn't feel that she can trust him with that knowledge, given how society-breaking it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you're just like, if only she told him... You know,
well, the thing is, right, if you were doing that and you were making that film now, how tempting would it be from a filmmaker's point of view to follow her escape as a 5-minute bit of extra tension and drama, as opposed to just being told, she's escaped, we found her? It's like...
Yes. I mean, there's probably budget issues there. And also the fact that there are very few female-speaking characters in the film in the first place.
Yeah, that's not a particularly great idea.
It's not. But then I suppose you could just be like, well, it's an evil regime, so it's an okay for an evil regime to be...
But there's...
To be like this.
Yeah, but there is... The woman invented the headband when she actually says, we invented this, and it's implied that she was, like, part of the thing.
Yeah. Yes.
So when he... When Plummer just goes, she's pregnant... When he kills himself.
Yes.
It's still, I knew it was coming, right? And I still went, whoa. It just, the way it's done.
It's quite brutal.
It's very brutal. It's very in your face.
So I'm going to shoot myself live on. I mean, it has to be, I suppose, because he's trying to, with his final moments, he's trying to kind of cement what it was that he did.
Yeah.
By broadcasting to the nation.
Yeah.
And he feels... But it's that thing of Christopher Plummer going, she's pregnant, you know, like, if only you'd known, you would have made different decisions.
That's
the tragedy. Yeah. That's the tragedy of the film, right? Yeah. Is that if he had known that one piece of information, the course of his life would have been different.
Absolutely. So that makes it into more
and
of
he would
a tragedy.
Have had Darth Vader as a son.
What? No, is that...
Hayden Christensen is... Yeah!
Is it?
Yes!
I did not spot that.
Well, no, because again, I looked at the cast list beforehand,
right,
and I saw his name. I saw his name, and then we were in the last 5 minutes of the film, and I was like, "Oh, Hayden Christensen hasn't turned up yet. Maybe he was one of the kids in the school, and I didn't notice." And then suddenly that scene happens, and I'm like, "Oh, there he is."
Well, that's your only connect there as well. You just want to break. Yeah.
Darth Vader. This may be a bit of a tangent.
Go for it.
And this is not a criticism of this film specifically.
I'm not going to take it personally. I didn't make it.
No, it's a criticism of films in general. Mm-hmm. Like how conveniently people get pregnant.
That's true. As opposed to real life.
Because, you know, you've had a child. I've had children. Our wives have had children. And we were there for a little bit. When you want to have a child, like it's not always like first month, boom, there you go. Oh, like it can take quite a while.
Absolutely.
And it just annoys me. It now annoys, being on this side of it, it now annoys me anytime a film kind of contrives to get somebody pregnant.
Yeah.
Because it's convenient for the plot. And you're just like, well, real life, I suppose real life is sometimes like that. People who don't want to get pregnant, and then everybody who wants to finds it really hard. I was irked by that.
Yeah.
More so than the cheesy sex scene. I was just like, oh, right, okay, she's pregnant. Right.
Yeah.
You know.
No, you're very right. You are.
Yes. I feel that there's lots philosophically and politically that we could talk about with this film.
Well, there is, because it just is. I mean, there's a lot going on, and the more you think about it, it kind of pops into your head. Later on, and you go, oh yeah, there is that, and how would that work? And then there's an answer comes on. There's a lot of exposition in this film. There really is. The business with the second American Revolution,
yes,
feels a lot now, to be honest, with AI and people going, oh, is my job even remotely safe? I don't think it is now. And so that's people being.
Oh yeah. So what was I didn't clock. What was the trigger for the revolution? They did. They went over the school lesson, didn't they?
I think there was a recession.
Right.
And the recession never went away.
Yes.
Because everybody's employment was never.
There weren't enough jobs for people.
It was boom and bust, and it just went bust. Yes. There was nothing else. And
so.
And the right wing solution to the crime thing, and the there's a lot of moments where you just go, you're just kind of surprised, and it's nice. So I think that's probably why I wanted to bring this one and suggest it. Yeah. But
so here's the question for you, Michael. How do you actually make an equal society without resorting to totalitarian methods? Because that's the big question for me. Do you come away from it going, the desires, the underlying idea of we want to make a society of equals, right? You know, instinctively, I think we like that.
Do you want to make a society of equals, or do you want to make a society that is happy? Because then we're at because there's that that brilliant line in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy where Slarty Bartfoss says, and if it comes down to a choice between being right or being happy, I'd rather be happy.
Yes.
And you're sort of going, actually, what do you want? Because you could do it like the equilibrium route, where you just drug everyone.
Yes.
But what you do in reality is you drug everyone with overdosing media. You give them too many. Because if you can only have 7 ideas in your head at once, and there are people who can hold more than ideas, because I can have like 3 tops, then you just give them a 4th idea, and it kind of quietens one of the ideas out. So if you're giving people a lot of crap to think about, like, oh, are you worried about this? What about this? Worry about this? Worry about this? And we're not going to tell you these other things that you should be worried about it's like, and in the background, it's like, oh, and global warming. And you're going, oh, God, it's things that keep you awake. So that's kind of a level of distraction that will keep you controlled. But are you after control, or are you after the equal society?
No, I'm saying that we instinctively, there's a whole podcast to be made about, and there are lots of people having conversations about, well, where do we get this idea from? I would say that we trace it back to Jesus. Like he was living in a very unequal society, and went out of his way to look to the downtrodden. And 2,000 years later, we live in the West, we believe in equality, you know. There's a whole kind of massive arc of history that kind of, you know, you follow to get to that point. But the idea of, you're not going to get somebody in, well, I suppose you, but perhaps you are now, but you're not, most people in the West go, equality, good idea. Like, we believe in it, whether we know what the source of that belief is. We believe that equality is a good thing. Right,
I think,
but
that's,
we all
being
have different ideas about
removed.
Like how we get there.
I genuinely
and what it looks
think
like.
as a target or as something to be aimed for is being removed from a lot of people's ethos, because the it does feel very much like the rise of the right, like from a political party point of view in this country, the choices are somebody very right wing or somebody quite right wing who's pretending to be a lot left wing, and you're like, well, you had a lot of left wing ideas, where have they gone? And are you just changing in order to make the people who hate the people who will vote for you so that you can get into power? And that's happening a lot, so that's a worry, because we have discussed this, is being nice to each other a left thing, or is that just the perception?
We had this text conversation the other day,
yeah,
didn't we? About left and right, and obviously, it's very easy to look at the right and go Hitler, Nazis, but then you can equally look at the left and go communism, Lenin, Stalin. You know, we may have at least one listener who's an ardent communist, having appeared on our show before. If you're listening, Steve, do write in. You know, you can, because it's not just left and right. It's not left and right.
No, it's not.
Well,
it's
left and right, and then authoritarian and libertarian.
Well, yeah,
right?
That's
and
it.
And
it's
the question: you can have authoritarian people on both political wings.
That was where I was trying to get with the argument, because for me, you've got what you're calling the libertarian, or what I would say would be more equality in the sense of being nice to each other, rather than equality in the sense of being forced to be the same, with an underlying current of people being in charge who have the things that you don't have.
Which
is true of both sides, because you had your Nazi leaders, you had your Stalin, who had the big, they moved into the palaces that were vacated by the people they'd killed.
Exactly.
But they were still the palaces. They were still the people in charge. And then they were kept in place by the opium of the masses, or by television, or by you know, because they've always said, if you want to have a rebellion, go on.
But I suppose it feels more of a left idea, because communism is all about, ostensibly, is all about equalizing everybody. You know, everybody gets the same. And obviously, we know in practice it didn't work like that. But it feels like more of a left idea than a right idea.
I know Hitler called himself the National Socialist, but that was
he wasn't.
But the policy of full employment, which was instigated by just telling someone, that's your job, go off and do it, you're not allowed to complain, there's no unions, there's no one to complain to. And if you do complain, you'll vanish. That could be applicable to all of these things, because you're right with the libertarian and the totalitarian thing, and that's instigated as a communist system, but it's also full employment, as in kind of, the youth of today, they need to get off their arses and just work harder.
Okay.
So that's what you hear in the Daily Mail kind of
thing. Which is why you've obviously got people on the right kind of
hankering for
national service right now,
people who are surprisingly too old to go to war themselves. There's a thought.
So I suppose you've got it coming from both directions. But I suppose the question is, what does equality mean? And that, I mean, we're already quite away towards the end of our podcast, so we perhaps haven't got time for this discussion. But you know, the idea of, because this film kind of goes out of its, well, it, part of this film is to point out that people don't have equal intelligence, you know, that you do get people who are outstanding, like Harrison, whose fate in this, his fate in this society is either to be lobotomized or to go and be part of the elite and run everything.
Which, to be fair, they're just admin. That's all they are. The elite are just administrators because they are out of their way to say they will always obey the will of the people first. They don't. They're not allowed to breed, apparently. Which is why Harrison's not been there that long, because he would be sterilized, because they tell him that at the beginning. He wouldn't. You're not allowed to have children. That's what they say.
Yeah.
So I assumed he'd have a vasectomy, but that's just what I assume of him.
Well, they did say abortion was mandatory. So it's a question. Yeah.
Which is ridiculous. They say we're not trying to breed. We're not trying to breed a master race, but that's not clever, because you still need someone to run stuff.
Yes. Well, that's the whole point. They're like, they recognize that there's a whole bunch of jobs that you can't do if you're, average. You know, I mean, I guess it's the reverse Golga Frinchens, because they get rid of all the middle managers in the B arc, and then, you know, are wiped out by the dirty telephone. I suppose I'm trying to talk more generally than this film. You know, the idea of like being of equal value, because we're all humans.
Yeah,
but we all have different capabilities and capacities, such that it would seem difficult to build a society where we're all
where
outcomes for all of us are the same.
But the libertarian, but also point one, not everyone wants the same outcome. There's in Better Than Life, the Rimmer and Lister both have in the book. They both have it's a wonderful bit of the book. Lister looks at what Rimmer wanted from Better Than Life. And he does, and he goes, "Oh my God! If only I'd thought, I would have had that." And Rimmer looks at what Lister wanted in life, and he goes, "Oh my God! If I was a better person, I would have wanted that." They're both jealous of each other's virtual getting everything you ever wanted, because one of them wanted so. And it's a lovely moment, because you just think nobody's ever happy.
No,
because
we're always envious of other people. The other shelter next to Jupilberry Shrub is always a mauvey shade of Pinky Russet.
Pinky Russet, yeah.
So quote Douglas Adams. The only way to not have envy is to not have a word for it, or to make your vocabulary too complicated to express it.
And then we've got the new dictionary from 1984, and we've gone full circle.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're the only country in the world where our dictionaries are getting smaller. Said Ramsey Nesbitt, which is bizarre. It was strange, but acastic. Okay. I think we should stop, because there's a lot that we've got. No, because it's important, right? What we've done is we've discussed something, and my enthusiasm for this has come back. I do think it's important, but you're right. The thing that it's trying to do does lend itself much more to a Twilight Zone, in the sense of, here's the idea, run with it, and we've stopped now. And it stays with you because of the suicide. It stays with you because that kid has got recordings of his dad killing himself, and he doesn't really want to watch it, but he doesn't know any of the background.
He doesn't know that it's his dad as well.
No, but know that Christopher Plummer's watching over him.
In some way, yes. Yes, yes. I suppose that's the thing. It's ultimately a very tragic film.
And just like episodes of The Prisoner, we've got people being lobotomized in order to make them just like everyone else.
Yes. Oh, yeah, bringing it back to that.
Yeah, so...
Yes.
And we don't have to do Doctor Who Watch.
No, because there isn't anybody.
No.
Yes.
So that's fine. So, before we vanish, I've clearly got some homework for next time.
Well, I'm going to allow you to potentially throw your own choice into the ring, and I'll explain why. Well, you'll see why when I tell you what
listening.
You've accidentally teed us up really nicely a few minutes ago. So my choice for April is going to be Red Dwarf.
Nice.
And I've chosen two episodes that I want to throw into the ring, but I'm going to say you can throw a third one in if you want to, because I'm sure you have episodes of Red Dwarf that you like.
You do not know that I was one of the originators of the Red Dwarf fan club, do you?
No, I don't know this.
No, well, I think we'll have to chat about that next time.
We'll have to chat about it. So I've chosen Thanks for the Memory from season two.
Okay.
Because one of my favourite, I guess, series one and two is, I think, peak Red Dwarf. And then I've chosen Samsara from series 11. The reason I've chosen one from series 11, that one in particular, is because I was in the audience for it.
Oh, well, if we're doing I was in the audience, Justice. Because I was in the audience for Justice.
Okay, we'll do Justice then.
Okay, then.
And I once had a short clip of that dubbed subtitled into Russian when I lived in Russia because I was showing it to a group of Russians.
Yeah.
So the
that's
next
absolutely
time...
not the episode I would have chosen by the way at all.
Well, okay. But... So next time we're gonna talk about Red Dwarf in general, but specifically the episodes Thanks for the Memory, Justice, and Samsara.
I thought you said Samsung.
Anyway,
so I have no memory of that last one.
Yes. Anyway, they're all available on Dave, I believe, or UK TV Play, if you haven't got
them. And iPlayer.
And oh, they're on iPlayer as well, are they?
Yeah, they're all on iPlayer.
Okay. I have them on. Yeah. I have almost, with the exception of Series 12, I have them all on DVD and Blu-ray. I have the most recent special that I still haven't watched on Blu-ray, but I don't have. I've watched the rest on UK TV Play, so I have seen Series 12.
I was given them on DVD when my best friend died. His partner gave me all of his Red Dwarf DVDs. So I have that. I'm just saying, I know where they are.
Yeah.
I have them.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I it's not a problem.
So yeah. So those are the three. I figured you liked Red Dwarf. We have never talked about Red Dwarf.
We have
to each
never
other,
discussed
as far
this
as I can remember.
Ever.
But I'm a big fan. You're a big fan. So we're going to talk about that for April.
Oh, that would be superb.
I guess we should wish you happy birthday because it's your birthday in March.
It is. Yes, well remembered.
Well, you said you were getting the choice in your birthday month and I get to choose in my birthday month. So
I can't remember mentioning that. So yes. It's great.
So next time in April, we will look at, which we'll record in March, obviously, we will look at Red Dwarf. But yes, it's been great. Thank you for picking Harrison Bergeron. I had never heard of it before. I enjoyed it and I think this was a great chat.
Excellent.
So I will sign off and leave you to the final words.
Yeah. Well, as always, be seeing you. Hello, this is Michael, recorded at a completely different time. So, we've had a bit of a chat and we've come up with a cunning plan. In April, we'll be discussing Thanks for the Memory and Samsara, which is Luke's choice. And in May, we'll do My Choices, which is Waiting for God and Justice, thus splitting it into one that we've both seen in person, recorded live per show, which gives us more space to chat. Four episodes of Red Dwarf is just not going to do anybody any justice. So we're going to split it into two. And then after that, we'll come back and I'll have a choice for something we didn't discuss after that. But that will be a surprise for then. So next time, it's Thanks for the Memory and Samsara. Be seeing you.